Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Strength Agenda Radio. Happy Halloween. I don't know if it will be Halloween. No, it won't be Halloween
Oh
by the time.
shit. Yeah.
It is Halloween. You didn't dress up. I did. My name is Tom Soroka. That is John Ziegler. John, how are you this morning?
I'm good, Rowdy Roddy Piper. Like, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm torn right now. So, like, obviously, for those who don't know, I love WWE and well, I love wrestling, the old school wrestling. And I've got a bunch of shirts that like I have had since high school. And so I'm torn because I also compete in the Highland Games. So I've got a bunch of kilts. I just don't own a red kilt. And I'm not going out and buy like my rule of thumb is like I am not buying stuff for Halloween. Like it's just not happening. And so I have kilts that I can wear with this shirt when I go in for work later today. But I also could take like the easy way out. And I have the big like blenders, sunglasses, and I have a couple of NWO shirts.
Oh.
Yeah, so I could go, I can go as a member of the NWO. Just wear a backwards hat, the NWO shirt, some black shorts, and the glasses. I can do that. So I'm torn which one I'm going to do. I've got about an hour to decide. Because I also have to go to an actual like official thing right after. I gotta go get some fingerprinting done for this job. And so I'm like, can't be walking in there in a kilt. So if I'm going to do the whole like Roddy Piper thing, I've got to have an extra set of clothes with me to change out of before I go to that appointment.
Right. Yeah.
So, like the NWO, it's a cutoff, you know, high school guy cutting the shit out of their shirt. It is cut to pieces. Like I'm pretty sure I cut the neck of it. And then the sleeves are cut like very close to like the nipple. So can't be walking into an official government place looking like that either. So either way, I'm gonna have to bring a change of clothes with me because I have that appointment right after I go into work for a little bit. So that's how I'm trying to be. What are you gonna be for Halloween, John?
Sorry, the dogs are going nuts. I can't figure out why. I think Rachel took one outside for a walk and left the other two in. And so they're like losing their minds by the door.
Wrap her in bubble wrap so she doesn't fall in any more holes.
Oh, yeah. No, sorry. She's outside picking up dog poop.
She literally the first thing on her check-in yesterday. I fell in a hole today. I was like, why are we falling in the holes?
That was the first thing I woke up to yesterday. What, because she got up super, she gets up super early. Like she, to those that have never met Rachel, my wife,
she is sunshine in human form.
She is sunshine in human form. She wakes up at like 3 o'clock in the morning to start her day. And it starts with walking the dogs, which means it's dark. And so she fell in a fucking hole yesterday walking the dogs. So I get up. It's 6 a.m. when I wake up. It's still dark. I'm like barely drinking coffee. And she's like, I fell in a hole. Or no, I think I saw Band-Aids on the counter. I was like, why are there Band-Aids and Neosporin on the counter? She's like, I fell in a hole. And then she shows me. I was like, okay. And then she shows me again when I get back from the office yesterday. And it's now like black and blue. I was like, Jesus Christ. So, but yeah, so that's Rachel. In a nutshell, she just like, that happens.
Yeah.
I am being nothing for Halloween, man. I'm at that stage, like, I don't have anything, kind of like you. Like, I have a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Nothing, like, stuff that I've collected over the years for things that I like, but nothing that would make a Halloween costume, really. And I'm just not going to go buy one. Right. I used to have a Spider-Man onesie, like an adult Spider-Man onesie. I don't know where it is. If I had that, I'd probably just rock that. The last time I'm going to tell this story because it's embarrassing, but funny all at the same time. The last time Rachel and I bought clothing for Halloween, we had gone to visit my family in Oregon, specifically my sister. And we went and it was Halloween. And so they were like, hey, do you want to go trick or treating with your niece and nephew? And they were little at the time. I was like, sure, but we got to go get something to wear. So we went to a store and we bought onesies. And I bought Monsters, Inc. What's the little one-eyed guy's name?
Oh, Mike and Sully. Mike.
Yeah, Mazowski. Mazowski. So I bought this onesie of Mike Mazowski. Only problem is I didn't realize it was a woman's onesie. And so when I put it on, it was super small.
Yeah, there's no room in the places you need room.
Not at all. But I was committed, man. I walked out around with that on. There's a picture somewhere, and I'm never going to show.
Sure I could text Rachel and get a picture, no problem. Announcements. Before we get going into today's main topics of stuff, what do we got announcements wise, brother?
Oh man, guys, the Strength and Unity shirt is leaving the store. So if you wanted it, like, get
When is that coming down? I gotta order it.
it. You haven't ordered one?
No, dude, I've been busy.
I know, me
Like,
too.
I've been like talking to people about it, and then I'll be like, oh yeah, I gotta order one, and then ADHD brain kicks in and I forget, so I'm gonna go order one right now.
This is the biggest problem within our organization is that the two of us have the same brain. It's like, oh, hey, I should do that. Oh, look at that butterfly over there.
And literally, what reminded me was Carissa had hers on this weekend at Mid-Americans, and I was just like, oh, that shirt looks really good. Oh, fuck, I should order one of those. That was exactly.
Yeah.
And then I drove 14 hours home and didn't order one in any of that time that I stopped or wasn't doing work. So.
I just ordered a bunch of stuff from us. And forgot to put one in my cart. I literally ordered a bunch of stuff and forgot to put one in because we do have so the Strength and Unity shirt. If you guys want it, I'm actually going to try and start getting the podcast out a little bit earlier.
Damn.
But if you want it, it'll be around. We'll keep it around until the 15th of November. Then that's going to swap out. We may go with the Tats and Lats shirt, which
Do that.
is.
No, we're gonna do that one. I like that one. Yeah.
Yeah, little punk rock, little fun. I have it on underneath this sweatshirt, but it's cold here.
Cool. What else we got?
We've got we have a team support t-shirt. It's the Daytona 25 shirt. It's a crop for women. It's an oversized, like they call them pump covers for men. And that one, the funds from that shirt go to support like the team traveling to Daytona for Worlds because there's two governing bodies, so there's two Worlds. We have people that have qualified for both, so that one, plus it's nice to just wear to support your favorite people. We've had a few people from the gym I coach at already buy it to support Rachel, and show their support there. We've got that, we've got some new stuff launching on the app this month. So that's exciting. We're going to put in some new programs. We're going to start the switch over of the team folks and the Highland Games folks.
They'll be in the first
And
this week.
what's that?
I said the Highland Games folks will be in there the week after,
Yeah.
not this upcoming week, but the following week.
Awesome. So that's the other thing too. So Highland Games. Right, is their season wrapped up, and so this is a great time to pick up the Highland Games training manual that Tom wrote.
Yeah, I figured we're gonna do an episode on it. I had it slated for next week. But
Awesome.
I just did another one. I just got asked to be on a podcast, kind of talking about exercise selection for off-season stuff. So I think that'd be a great time to talk about that. Want your insights on GPP stuff, conditioning stuff, because that was one of the big things that I feel like is lacking. But we can talk about that, like I said, next week and such.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week. Also, we have a. So, for those that don't know, right, Tom and I have both been gym owners. I've been in executive leadership for close to 20 years because I'm old. Tom's been at a very high level of coaching and developing other coaches for coming up on 2 decades.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 decades, and I think it's important people understand too, like that you've worked with the guys from Cal Strength and Muscle Driver, and for those people within that world, right? Strength,
Weightlifting.
yeah, USAW weightlifting. Tom's been part of USAW weightlifting since I believe the world formed.
No, I don't know. Come on. I haven't been
Since
that long.
it became from dust into its being. But anyway, so that's just kind of our to give you an idea of our experience. But we took that, and because we understand small businesses, gym owners starting, people starting gyms, people trying to do better with their gym, sometimes lack tools
Yeah.
to really understand that. So we came together. The dogs are going nuts. Hold on.
You're good. Pretty much what we ended up doing was we just took everything that we wish we had had getting going, and we put it into, PDF format. What a lot of it, like we've got a lot of these manuals that are set to go, whether, they cover a variety of topics from marketing to financial stuff to just general like rules and how to deal with like an employee.
Operations
Just
and
all the different
yeah,
things.
all night.
Because, like, I mean, I know because that was one of the things you and I bonded over. I talked about when I first decided to open a gym, I spent like a week traveling around to a bunch of different gym owners. At the time, I was living in Charlotte, North Carolina, but a couple of gym owners that I respected. And I pretty much was sitting there with a notebook and I was just like, I need to know, like, tell me the things that you wish you knew. And they gave them to me. And even though I did that, like I said, I talked to like about five or six different gym owners. Travis Mash was one of them. Don McCauley was another one that helped me out. Steve Pinkerton, who owns CrossFit Vitality, which they hosted the first open workout at 13.1. That's how old I've been around there. But like I said, all these guys that helped me out, like even with all of that information, there was still stuff that I learned as we were going. And like I started off with that CrossFit, then I moved into a smaller specialty facility, then into the bigger specialty facility, and then I've been helping people when they open theirs. Was just on the phone with a lifter of mine, an athlete of mine, opening their own gym out in Virginia and stuff like that. And that's what kind of brought us to this. So it's going to be a resource that we think is very valuable. It pretty much lays out everything that we wish we would have had, and then some, and things that we're still learning. So yeah, I'm excited for people to be able to get their hands on it.
Yeah, me too. And it's we talked about, I think, a couple podcasts ago, like the sheer amount of failure that we've both experienced too within this world. And I think one of the important things that you just talked about that goes into this and why we felt like, hey, we should do this, we should take this experience and this knowledge, is that this isn't just, hey, I read this somewhere and I think I can write something about it. This is born from, similar to you. Like, I've worked with mentors across a wide array of industries at, everything from, gosh, people who've worked with Coca-Cola and YogiTea and large organizations like that, and then smaller startups, and kind of the things that they've taught me. The CEO and founder of DMV.org is one of the folks I am lucky enough to have kind of mentored under, and he's been a successful CEO for a long time. And the lessons that we've taken from there and how they built businesses from kind of the beginning on through, right? To be able to have a foundation to understand how they operate and then do it well. So we're excited to be able to give this to people and give them the resource that honestly I wish I had laid out, even with the knowledge that I have. It would have been
Right.
nice to just have a series of books with workbooks to be able to sit down and go, okay, I'm going to do my business plan. Great, my business plan is done. Now I'm going to sit down and do my financial plan. Now I'm going to do my marketing, like all the way through. So anyway, that's going to roll out. And then, yeah, I think that's a lot. It seems like a lot.
Yeah,
There's a lot going on.
that's why I wear. Yeah, that's why we have our notebooks and our whiteboards and our sticky notes all over the place. Speaking of, I can get rid of this one. I had Mason's letter of recommendation I had to write yesterday. So yeah, we'll parlay into today's main topic. We are talking about meets, competitions in particular, weightlifting meets, things along those lines. Because it is competition season, pretty much the end of it. Virus Finals, formerly American Open Finals, formerly American Open, is going to be taking place in December. That's usually like for a lot of people competing in USAW, that is like the culminating event. The weekend after that is the Howard Cohen, which for the USA Masters weightlifting, that is their culminating event to end the calendar year. And so this year is a little unique with the Virus Finals because they're adding in the UMWF Masters Worlds, so the second world championships this year. Yes, we have become powerlifting where we have multiple world championships, but such is life. But the big thing was this weekend, from a local standpoint, I went back to Chicago. It was the Mid-American Championships. And we have now verified this, that Mid-Americans is the second longest running, not the longest running, meet in the United States history, celebrated its 50th year. And for when I was coming up as a coach, in the Chicagoland area, that was the meet that people kind of use as a tune-up to make see where they were at. Because it was about 2 months out from finals, if you were going to finals and such like that. And for other people who just might not be going to finals, it was just a chance for them to get, some last minute PRs and on the platform and such. And so throughout the day, it was kind of a surreal experience for me. First and foremost, Team Saw killed it. Mason hit a competition PR in the snatch. I'm going trying to go through everybody that went. Allison, it was a train through meet and she went 5 for 6. She missed the jerk on her last attempt, thwarting a 6 for 6, but I believe it was a PR clean that she hit on the platform. Aaron went 6 for 6 with competition PRs in both of his lifts. They looked really good. And then the next day, I had Ashley, Chloe, and Carissa. Carissa was a train through for her. She went 4 for 6, but she hit a competition best in the snatch. And it was the first time in a long time I've been stumped in terms of picking attempts because the plan was for her to finish at the second attempt that she took at 72. And she's like, "Can I get 2 shots at it?" Which, when an athlete tells me that, it means that they're not super confident in it, but like they want an opportunity. And I'm like, "All right, cool." So I put it down as her second attempt and she absolutely smashed it. And I literally like walked up to the score table. I was like, "I don't know what to do now because I wasn't expecting her to make that." So she put on a lift that she hasn't touched and dang near almost made it. So that was good. Ashley went 5 for 6, down in a new weight class. So everything's kind of a PR for her and stuff like that. Chloe hit a competition PR on her snatching, and was within like 1 kilo of her comp total. And then later in the day, Jess, one of our athletes, she kind of dipped her toe in her and to coaching and had her first athlete. So I was kind of helping her with that. Had a lot of conversations with her throughout the day, the day before, because she came up the day before. She's like, "I just want to see what you're doing," and ask as many questions as possible, which I always love. And then another one of our athletes, Ted D'Amico, was there with his own club, who I'm going to be doing a level two there next month. And he was there with his own club and stuff like that. And it was kind of cool to see, those two doing their coaching thing and stuff. And, from just talking to all of them, there were a couple of scenarios that had popped up. And it just got me thinking about like information that people need to have when it comes to coaching at local events and stuff like that. And so the big thing that we were talking about was like one of the situations that popped up is a coach burned a clock of another athlete. And when you burn a clock, what that means is if you miss a lift, you have to follow yourself and you're given a 2 minute clock. But if there's like an athlete right behind you, they can the way the rules set up is like once the clock starts, that athlete is on the clock. But you can declare a lift. So let's just say like John is going and I'm going. John misses a lift, I go and I miss a lift. But then I wait until the bar is set and they call my name, and then I declare 1 kilo more, which puts John back on the clock. Even though he's following himself, he doesn't get a 2 minute clock. He only gets a 1 minute clock. It's called burning a clock. It's kind of a, I'm not gonna say it's a dick move because all is fair in love and war. But it's a tactic that you can use to kind of, if you're in a tight competition with somebody, especially at these bigger stages, it's a tight comp, it's a strategy you can use to give your athlete more time and your opponent less time to recover for their lift so you can ensure you make it and they don't. And the coach that did it came up to me. He goes, "Man, I feel like the biggest jerk right now. I just burned the clock of somebody, blah, 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 blah." And I looked at him and I was like, "Don't worry about it." And he's like, "What do you mean, don't worry about it?" And I was like, "You're here for your athlete. At the end of the day, like you are there for your athlete." I'm like, "Also, this is practice." And then that sparked a whole conversation, which is where I wanted to kind of take this in terms of, in the sport of weightlifting, and I'm sure this can be applicable to things like powerlifting or any other sports that have like a meet style in terms of their competition. You have varying levels of things. And one of the things that I think needs to be more prevalent, and I think it is getting there, one of the ways to do this is people need to be going to get in their level twos. More coaches need to be getting their level twos. But like you get coaches that come into the sport and they want to be a top end. Like I want to coach at the Olympics. I want to coach at Worlds. I want to coach at Pan Ams, all this stuff. But like you watch them at a local event and they are severely lacking in basic skill sets that you need as and it's it, it they kind of some of them kind of have this air of like local is just a stepping stone for me kind of a deal. Now me for instance, like I enjoy local competitions. I really do like being at competitions for a variety of reasons. The biggest reason is for me it's practice. It's one of those situations where I am of the firm belief because Jess and I had a conversation about it because she's like, I always viewed weightlifting coaching as an art. She's like, but then when I watch you and I talk to you and see you going through your process, it's a science. I was like, no, it's both. Like, it's just, it's because like one of the things was like one of the times, and I told her, I said, it's just, it's a skill, it's more than anything, but like, it's just, it's something that you have to develop and you have to practice. And one of those situations was like, I heard a bar drop and I heard a bar drop and without saying anything, I just turned around and said, hey, take that lift. And Jess turns around and she's like, that was 15 counts out on the button. Like, how did you know that? And it was just habit. Like I had been doing it enough throughout the day that like you get into a good rhythm and stuff like that. And so I just wanted to take a chance to just talk about a couple of things that I feel like coaches need to work on in particular at the local meets and stuff like that. And the first and foremost is in terms of warm-up tempo. Probably one of the biggest things that I saw this weekend was you had people that were warming up too fast. And so like, and because, and I, before I get into any of these other nuts and bolts, I want to say, Forza Weightlifting put on a phenomenal meet, CrossFit Freedom, was a great host, beautiful facility. The event went off without a hitch. I think we got a little bit behind at one point and then we ended up getting caught up by the end of the day. So that was awesome. They did a great job running the event, had a lot of good equipment, stuff along those lines. But the clocks, not everybody could see the clocks while we were going. And when you have situations like that, you kind of have to keep in mind where the clock is, where your athlete is, and such like that. And there were, you could see like the sessions before. So when you get a session with athletes, like, while one session is going, the other session can start warming up, but you have to kind of know where your athlete is in the rotation because the main difference between powerlifting and weightlifting is powerlifting, the order stays the same no matter what weight you're hitting. So, like if you're third in the order, you're always going to be third in the order. Weightlifting is an ascending bar, so it goes up by weight, and that determines your order. So, like you could be finished with all three of your lifts before somebody even takes their first because of how it's set up. And so it's just one of those situations where I feel like warm-up tempo needs to be something that is stressed more often. And my suggestion for coaches in terms of this, and then I would love to hear, your tips and tricks and stuff like that. First and foremost, everybody's using software these days. The one that we use in Illinois is Oliftia. It has an app. Everybody can have access to that app. And I think it is behoove of the coaches to get the app, download the app so you can look, because once the weigh-ins are done, the session is set. Openers are set. You know exactly where your lifter is. And regardless of whether you can see the clock or not, when you're trying to figure out your session, there is no excuse for you to not look up where your athletes are and see where they are and make sure they are warmed up accordingly. Because, like I said, I had an athlete, or not, I didn't, but there's an athlete on the platform next to me who she essentially warmed up, had to warm up twice. Like she was like ready to go out there, take her lifts, and the session had just started. And when the session started, she still had like 15 attempts before she had to go out there. So that she had to go back down, warm back up. It ended up not affecting her too much. She did awesome. I think she ended up winning her division and stuff like that. But just what are some things that like you would incorporate in terms of like warm up tempo with your athletes? Because the other thing Jess and I talked about was you got like the people who don't want to sit down and prefer to go fast versus the people that prefer to go slow and all that stuff. I've got other things that I'll implement with that. But like, what are just some things in terms of warm up tempo that you implement with your folks that you work with?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I want to back up a little bit to the idea of the local meet and the people are like, oh, I want to coach at the Olympics. Learn to walk before you can, learn to crawl before you can run. There's no better way to do that, right, than to be at a local meet, because no matter how good you are in the gym with your athletes, once a meet day hits, Like I've been a coach for a long time, and the first time that I had to coach and warm somebody up at a meet, I did not do a good job. Like I was lost. I mean, I asked a lot of questions and I watched other coaches and I tried to see what they did. Rachel, having competed a lot and kind of helped me survive in that regard too. But I made mistakes in terms of like especially the warm-up tempo, right? Warming people up too fast because I was used to warming them up how I would warm them up inside of the gym within the time allotted that we have, and didn't really understand, looking at, well, where are they at in terms of the order and understanding that, well, you've got five people ahead of you, but the first person is probably going to take all three of their lifts before the next person goes. And then starting to really understand. We talked about this after World, understanding when you have like five people all with the same starting weight, and that's probably not gonna like stay that way, and people are gonna move around and you could move up, but then you've got your own plan to like slide them down a little bit and get a little bit of extra time. So for me, what I've really had to learn, and this was a challenge for me because I'm mathematically challenged, right, is understanding how to read that board and get an idea of how far out are they really,
Mock
right?
meets. I know a lot of WSLs do this, and I always speak about Illinois WSL because that's a majority of my experience. Like, I've experienced the Carolina WSL, which is another great one. I'm now out into the Mountain North WSO now and stuff like that, which is another well-run WSO. I've experienced the Pacific Northwest WSO as well, being out with Cal Strength and all that. But one of the things that I do firmly believe in is, if it is your first time and if you are brand new to this, like, running mock meets the way a meet is supposed to be run. Illinois Weightlifting has a whole resource that they put out for people on how to run a mock meet at your facility. Like you were just talking about, like, getting that practice with a board, because people like, and I spend most of my time at the on the day two of the level two going over the board, because people just don't understand, excuse me, how that board operates. And like, and especially with the different softwares, there's little nuances with each software in terms of the order, athletes moving around and stuff like that. And if you don't know the basics of counting a board, like, it's one of those situations where you could end up, like, getting your athletes screwed and stuff like that.
And I think one of the things that for me, because I can have a tendency every now and then, just looking at the board and following the board to misjudge from time to time. And so I get nervous about misjudging time spots, and I might warm somebody up a little bit too fast. And if I warm somebody up too fast and I'm within like, let's say, four lifts.
Real quick, when you say too fast, because for people who might not know, what do you mean warm up too fast? Like, what does that mean?
So for me, what that means is I've got them ready to take that first platform lift, but I'm still like four lifts out, five lifts out, right?
They're ready to go, and they're going to be sitting for a minute versus
And they're going to get cold.
getting all the rest a little more even.
And so instead, right, if when that happens, and I think it happens to everybody at some point,
Oh, 100%.
right, then one of the things that I've learned was to put weight on that's heavier than what their lift is going to be and have them do pulls to just stay warm. Right? Not doing the full lift, just get a really nice pull as high as they can. And, okay, we're good. We're still a little warm.
And that's something I picked up from Travis Mash. I know I've talked about it. It's a training thing called post-potentiation activation, where you overload the central nervous system with a lift, similar biomechanically to what you're about to do, so that when you go to take the actual attempt, it feels lighter and all this other stuff. But this is my one caveat, and this is my one bugaboo about people that do that crap in the back. If you're gonna do a heavy pull, do it like you do the lift. I cannot stand watching people go into the back to do a heavy pull, and they just do essentially like a modified
Deadlift.
RDL hybrid, slow as all get out. I understand it's heavy, but like, move and use your legs. because
Yeah.
you're going to go
That's
out
right.
on the platform and you're going to do something that doesn't resemble what you've been warming up with. So like if you are going to use heavy pulls and stuff like that, which I prefer over like a light power snatch or power clean and jerk or something along those lines, but just make sure that you're doing it mechanically the same way you've been doing everything else, or you're just
Yes.
setting that athlete up for failure.
100%, right? It's funny that you bring that up because in training, right, when I'm working with my folks in the gym and we have pulls, that is the one thing that I get the most irritated by and I hammer the most is when I look over and people are just essentially doing a deadlift, right? And essentially a deadlift into a calf raise up on their toes. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I want to hear hip contact. I want to see those shoulders up by your ears. I want to know that you're exploding through the floor in this
100%.
pull, every single pull. This is not a deadlift. I want you doing deadlifts. I'm going to tell you, hey, let's do clean grip deadlifts. Let's do snatch grip deadlifts. But when it's a pull, like everything you've got. So, yeah. So when doing that, you know, it's really kind of. And you're right, and Jess is right. There's an art and there's a science to it. And I have definitely gotten better over time by watching like you and other coaches like Jim from Summit, you know, watching how everybody else kind of calculates it out and realizing like there's you look at some lifters and you can watch their first lift and realize, hey, that person, even though we're in a very similar like weight range, is almost topped out.
And that, and that brings me to my second point. Another big thing. So my first one was warm-up tempo. And just to summarize what John and I talked about, just being cognizant of not only what your athlete is doing, but what the other athletes around you are doing, and then making sure that you are doing everything in your power to make sure you know where the clock is, where your athlete sits in the session, so that you're not warming up too fast, you're not rushing their attempts, all of those things. Which brings me to my next thing is opener selection in terms of your attempts. Probably another gigantic, so I made a post on the Strength Agenda social media page, essentially about, and I only gave about half of the information about how we determine openers in terms of, and what I talked about was the data points that, we talked about the data points that I look for in terms of selecting openers. And there were a couple of comments that came through that people were like, that would have been helpful to have like before the meet. And it kind of dawned on me, I was just like, oh, like there are possibly coaches out there again that like don't understand like openers and stuff like that. So kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit in terms of like making sure that you're setting your athlete up for success, because at a local competition in particular, now I understand nationals, I understand worlds and stuff like that, you're going to be swinging for the fences a little bit more because it's a higher stakes competition. But local events, there should be absolutely no reason for athletes to bomb out outside of extenuating circumstances. Like it happens.
Yeah.
It happens. It like it,
Sure.
there is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's going to happen to you at some point. If it's going to happen, I'd rather it happen at a local event than a national
Yes.
international event. But at a competition, like in terms of selecting your openers, like they should be gimmies. And so,
Yes.
data point wise, I'll summarize the post and people can go back and look at it. The biggest things I'm looking for when I'm like trying to determine openers is during their meet prep, how much did they make? What was the heaviest lift they made with no misses? What was the heaviest lift they made with three misses? Because I'm sorry, if you're taking more than three attempts to make a lift, like you're not going to make it. You don't get three in a competition. Stop doing it in training.
Right, yeah.
I'm looking at what is the most that they have made that calendar year. So if it's at the beginning of the year, like we're doing nationals in March, it's March to March. What is the most you've
Yeah.
made from March to March? And then the last thing I'm looking at is what is your competition best? I have a formula that I use, taking those four data points, and it helps me determine an opener. And I was talking about this last night with Mike Catone. And since I started implementing this system in 2019 was the first time I used it, where I sat down, mapped out attempts, and like Rachel can tell you, like she's been doing it ever since she's been with me. We're at 87.5% success rate on openers, which I don't know how that compares everybody else wise. It's just the number that I was able to pull from all of the data that I have, but an 87.5% success rate on openers is pretty dang high. I'm pretty happy with that number overall. And
For
I
sure.
and that's another thing, like I said, that I see at these local events is coaches not taking the time to make sure they're putting their athlete in the appropriate position to be successful. Because when you go
Man.
down a missed lift right off the bat, depending on the athlete, that can do a lot for them mentally. So in terms of like, and then the other thing too is like letting the athlete know you're going to be taking these data points so they can start preparing in training. Like Carissa, for instance, she missed her third attempt. And I told her flat out, like, I was like, I need you now because we now have about 4.5, 5 weeks before Daytona. I said flat out, when you go heavy on your snatches, I need you practicing those attempts we just took because I want her to make that 75 on the platform. She needs to
Right.
be getting in the mindset that these are the jumps I'm going to make so that that second attempt becomes routine. So that first attempt is something that she can hit with like no brainer whatsoever. And then she's comfortable putting that 75 on the bar for that third attempt at Worlds kind of a situation. It's just one of those situations for me when it comes to other coaches, there needs to be some preparation. Like the day of the meet should not be the first time you and your athlete are talking about attempts, and that's lazy coaching as far as I'm concerned. And if you're talking about trying to be a good national level coach or an Olympic level coach and stuff like that, how do you expect to do that if you're not handling the basic details of talking about openers and talking about attempts before you get to a local competition?
Right. And, I think that, again, the importance of local competitions is as a coach is so critical because, you're going to make mistakes. And if you're just like, I'm too good to coach at a local event, I'm going to wait until my athlete makes nationals and then I'll go or something on a bigger stage. And you get to a bigger stage, those mistakes are compounded because every other coach had went to those local meets and ironed everything out and watched their athlete move and watched them like how they mentally reacted on the platform when they missed.
And I'm going to tell you right now, especially at a national event, everybody's trying to, cut their teeth and everybody's trying to, show that they know what they're doing. If they sense there is a coach in the back that doesn't know what they're doing, it is like blood in the water and they will do everything in their power at the table to screw that coach over. Like it doesn't matter, like friends or not, if they see a coach that is either not paying attention, isn't planning properly,
Right.
is like just doing weird stuff in the back, like doing too many lifts or whatever, like they will burn clocks, they will move open like lifts around so that it messes with your count because they don't think you're paying attention. They essentially want to get you out of the way. So that again, just going back to the whole local events need to be treated as a practice, as a prof, like it just consider it like a job interview too. You know what I'm saying? Like this will goes into my third point, but I will get there anyways. But just treat it like a job interview in terms of setting you up for bigger success down the road.
Yeah. And I think as far as like, figuring out openers, it's because I essentially learned figuring out openers from working around you. Right. So it's very much kind of the same thing. Rachel has a hand in helping out with that too, with the folks that we coach in terms of that. And she's smart. She's really smart. She's great at it. And I agree with you. Like when I take somebody in, especially somebody new, right, somebody who's been maybe coming to weightlifting class with me for a while, and then we're like, hey, let's try, getting on the podium or getting on the platform and seeing how you do, right? And they're like, okay, and they get super nervous and they're super anxious and everything's gonna go sideways on them and they might miss. So here's my take on that first competition and that first lift. I assume there's a good possibility they're going to miss that gimme lift the first time because they stepped up on the platform, looked out, saw everybody staring back at them, and immediately their heart rate jacked up and they got super nervous. They're not going to miss that lift because the weight is too heavy. Like if you're saying, okay, hey, look, like I think we're going to open you at 98%. Really? Like, you're
Like,
like,
it's just it, yeah, and that's the thing, is it's like it's I can go on for hours about this.
yeah, I agree. But yeah, I think the important thing when you're setting that opening lift is setting, for me, I want the opening lift to calm the nerves,
Right.
right? And then from there, usually there's that, and it'll change a little bit. So it's kind of like, I don't know, maybe this is a bad comparison for some people, but like there's a game called Spades. And I don't know if you've ever played Spades, but
I don't think.
there's a lot of bluffing in Spades. There's a lot of sandbagging in Spades. And so that mentality kind of carries into this a little bit for me, where it's like, okay, well, your opener is lower than what we're actually going to open you at based on if you're moving well in the back.
Yeah.
If you're moving well in the back, like your opener is probably going to be really low. And then when you're moving well in the back to give you a little bit more breathing room and to feel a little bit more comfortable, we're going to get you to what the opening weight was that you would have done, and then say, okay, like let's just bump you a kilo, maybe 2 kilos. You get up on platform, you hit that first lift, come back, the air kind of comes out of the room, you breathe, right? And then we're like, okay, we're moving well. We're doing good. And then you move on from there. But yeah, I've also seen, and I think this goes to your point about people wanting to coach at the Olympics, and
Right.
there's some ego involved in that. And I have seen coaches put people on platforms that should not
I mean,
be
that's
on
the that
a
is
platform.
a whole yeah, that is
We can
whole
have that.
that's a whole other debate for a whole other day, talking about athlete behavior
Yeah.
and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, just kind of set to sum it up. Point number two of this is making sure that you are selecting openers that are appropriate for the athlete, taking all of the factors into consideration. And like I said, I gave you four data points that I use in terms of determining that. That's a lot of data that you can have. Just from that alone, you should be able to figure out where that athlete should be opening and stuff like that. And so then my point number three is we kind of alluded to it in the last one, but talking about confidence with the athlete. It's a job interview for you as a coach. The biggest thing, like, and you kind of alluded to it just now with like the whole like whether they should be on the platform or not. At the end of the day, the experience is supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
Like, I understand that that is a very subjective sliding scale based on like the national level, the international level, and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, John, you and I aren't working with anybody that's getting paid to do this. It is supposed to be fun for those individuals. It should not be stressful. It should not be anxiety inducing. And they should not be like bawling their eyes out when they're done because that was the most traumatic experience of their life.
Don't think I've ever seen that.
I've seen close. Like I have seen people compete on a platform and then you never see them again.
Yeah.
It's about as close as I've seen to that, but it's just like when we're talking about local competitions and stuff like that, it should be fun in some form or fashion. And I know I get my jokes will be made to me about like, I'm not, I'm not smiling or I'm not this or that, but like this is a two-part thing, the funness or the funness for me. The big thing is when you're in the back, stop over coaching. The work is the athlete is probably already going through a ton anxiety-wise, and they are stressed out to the max. They just don't understand what they should be doing or why things are not going well. Putting on a weightlifting clinic in the middle of a session as you're warming up in the back is not
Yeah, no.
one. Like it was same thing with like Allison and Aaron, like Aaron was just like, hey man, like if you see anything, like let me know. And I was like, Aaron, I said, I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm gonna give you very basic stuff because now is not
Yeah.
the time to be correcting things. And so I would just say, hey, shoulders over just a little longer, get your knees back more, like little things like that. But I'm not sitting here talking about like where his pressure in his foot in terms of his big toe being put down and plantar flexing and dorsal
Yeah.
and all that shit. And so in the back, you need to keep a loose environment. Your athlete needs to know that they can trust you. If you're bouncing around like a rabbit because you're not sure about this or you're not sure about that, or you're having conversations with your buddy who's coaching his athlete over there, or he's getting warmed up for the next session, and you're not focusing on the athlete, it's just one of those situations where like I've now people like joke around about stories all the time now about like Aurora, where like they'll hear me yelling if I'm not even in the room, like they. So they have that curtain down, and I'll be on the one side counting one lifter, and I've got another lifter going, but I'm still paying attention to the clock. I'm still looking at my sheet, and I'm like, I heard a bar drop. I'm like, okay, you need to go. It's just your athlete needs to know that you've got their back and that you're putting them in the position to lift. After they make a lift, fucking high five them. Like, oh, that they did a good job. Like, this is not like the military here. And so it's just like I saw a lot more of that this weekend, which made me very happy to see a lot more coaches getting into it, celebrating with the lifters and stuff like that and things like that. But then going back to my friend who was like upset about burning his clock, I said flat out to him, I was like, who cares? And he's like, what do you mean, who cares? I was like, you are here for your athlete and your athlete alone. If you're not willing to do those things for your athlete to put them in the best position to exceed, why are they being coached by you? And so just that's kind of my whole, like, that was like my third point here with all of this is just like, you have to make it somewhat fun, but you have to, like, they have to trust you and they have to know that you're going to have their back no matter what. An athlete bombs out, the first thing you need to be doing is consoling them. I'm not saying you need to bust out a therapy session and an emotional support blanket and all this stuff, but just stand next to them. Some people don't like being touched. That's fine. Just stand next to them and just say, hey, I understand this isn't the result you want. Like Chloe, I'm sure she won't, mind me sharing. She was not happy about her total. Like she was very frustrated with herself because she goes, I know I'm better than this. And all I said to her was like, and I do too. This isn't your defining performance. I know you've got more in the tank. I saw the results. You saw the results. I know you're not happy with this. I'm not happy about this for you because I know what you put into it. The coaches that are like, well, that was embarrassing, or they make it about them and stuff like that. Like it just doesn't fit. And when I see that, I want to tie your shoes together the next time I see you sitting down and then watch you trip and fall. Like it's just one of those big things that drives me nuts. And so it's just, and I'm curious, like if you have any like things that you implement or stuff like that to kind of just keep the mood a little bit lively. Like I know I joke around with Rachel all the time, like because I'll be like, stop smiling. Because she's always just like sitting there, like she'll drop a bar on her head and then be sitting there in the back, like, and I'm like, Rachel, like you almost died, like knock it off, kind of a deal. But like just in your experience, like what are some things that like especially with you right now, because you have way more what I would consider beginner athletes than I do. It's been a minute since a full-blown beginner. So what are just some tactics, some things that you do to kind of keep things, low-key as low-key as possible going into a meet?
I think, man, there's so much to the mental side of competition,
100%.
right? And it's one of those things that as I've kind of gone on in my own life and developed a habit of like meditation and studying mindset and everything else, that you really realize, hey, to your point, this is not about me and my experience, right? Like it's it, if you're showing up to a competition with your athlete with the mindset that this is a stepping stone for you to greater things, like I'm gonna say it, go fuck yourself. Like honestly, because if that's your mindset, if you're showing up and all your anxiety is focused around like your athlete not performing well and how it reflects on you as a coach, I would be more concerned about when that person walks off the platform looking bummed and you're an asshole, that's gonna look bad on you as a coach. If my athlete, like if I've got somebody and they miss a lift on the platform and they come back, they're bummed, right? And my job is to be like, hey, it's okay, right? This happens. It doesn't make you a bad lifter. It doesn't mean you can't go out and make the next lift. This is just one, and we're just going to shake it off. I know what you're capable of. I believe in you. I have seen what you can do, right? And I'm proud of you for being here. Like,
That's all it takes, dude.
and so that's part of that. The other part of it is, don't take yourself too seriously.
Jesus Christ, no.
If you take yourself too seriously, then like you're gonna ramp up your athlete's anxiety, and they're already sitting back there. So your athlete's already worried about, if they're going to miss a lift. They're already worried about being on the platform and everybody staring at them and studying every little movement that they make. They're already nervous about letting you down as their coach, right? That's the concern that they have because you've put all this time and energy into them and they're like, I can't let my coach down. They're already worried about all that. So they're already amped up. I'm nervous for them. Right. And so, in order to alleviate that, I make jokes.
100%. I did the same way.
I make jokes right before they go up. Like, I'll lean over and I'll say something like, totally random and horribly, off-putting. I'll be like, hey, just remember for me, please, that the chalk in the bucket that you're putting on your hands is not cocaine. Please don't try and stick it up your nose. And they'll look at me and they'll just like crack that grin of like, that was the dumbest thing you could ever say. But what it did was, is it brought them down. Like, it reduced the anxiety. And then it's like, okay, now we're good. And to your point, when they come off the stage, make or miss, I don't care. I'm going to give you that high five. I'm going to put my arm around you. I'm going to tell you I'm proud of you. Make or miss, I don't give a shit. Right. If you're like, if I've had, athletes come running off of the platform, I know you have too, where they like tackle me and give me a big hug because they're so excited. And then I've had them come off and tell me, Coach, I'm sorry. I'll be like, about what? What are you sorry about? Did you do your best? Yes. Okay. Then that's all I ask. You're not perfect. I'm not perfect. You don't make every lift. I'm not making every lift. And if you did bomb out, right? If they do bomb out, that's not on them, that's on me.
100%.
Right? The failures, this is how I view leadership in general too in business, is that I don't take credit for the wins, but I
Nope.
take responsibility for the losses.
There you go. And that was kind of my, that was going to be my like summation of all this is like, at the end of the day, I'm not going to sit here and say it's your fault, but when the athlete doesn't do well, like you've got to figure out what went wrong and sort it out kind of a deal. And like I said, that just brings us back to the whole beginning of this topic of like why local meets are important for me. That's how I figure it out. I test things out at local meets. I see what's going on at a local meet. I like if I've got an athlete who, is a little bit out of breath or whatever, I will warm them up faster than normal. So like they're only doing like maybe every two attempts or something like that, or I'll slow them down because they didn't like sitting and they got to get used to it. Like you've got to figure out what went wrong if you are in that position and the athlete doesn't do well. So to wrap this up, so we're not talking people's ears off all day about this because we both could. Point number one is focusing on your warm-up tempo. If you're at a local meet, that is the best place to practice your warm-up tempo, how to make sure that that athlete is ready to go in a timely fashion, and you are doing everything within your power to make sure you're setting that athlete up for success. Number two is making sure you are picking appropriate openers. There are a ton of different methods out there. You can check with Kara Heads, out there in Washington, D.C., Danny Camargo down in Orlando, Greg Everett down in or out in Seattle area, myself, Jim White at Summit, any of these coaches, they all have their individual methods and they work. Their athletes are very successful on. Figure out a way that works for you and your athletes to pick appropriate openers so you are not just you're setting them up for success versus putting in results that you really don't want. And then that third piece is get the buy-in. Set, create an environment that that athlete not only trusts you, but they're having a little bit of fun with the meet because if they're not having fun, they're not going to come back. And if you don't have athletes coming back to meets, there's no reason for you to be at the meet coaching. So with that, that was a good one. And like I said, it was just that those were a lot of conversations that I was having with people this weekend and stuff. And I felt like it
Those are
was
good conversations.
there with the greater good and stuff like that. So with that being said, let's go ahead and wrap this up. Anything else that we forgot? Oh, the app. If y'all are on the app and you've been signing up for the app, we appreciate your guys' support. Get your shirts. The Rogue Invitational is going on literally as we speak. If you
Yeah.
want to do either Strongman or CrossFit and you want to see that being done over there in Scotland, check that out. Their media packages were absolutely terrible that they put out. Just wear the damn kilt. Don't put pants on underneath it, boys.
Right. Yeah.
Anyways. It was funny because after I sent you that, I sent it to another friend. And he goes, "Hey, wait till you see the girls." And I'm like, "I can't. I stopped looking." But anyways, happy Halloween to everybody. John, appreciate you as always. We
Appreciate it,
appreciate
bud.
you guys for subscribing, signing up for all of our programs, our newsletters, the app, everything along those lines. Thank you for your support, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye, guys.